Hello, this is Jesse Liberty, and this is yet another podcast. John Papa, I am pleased to say, is a friend. He is a great guy, a truly good person, and technically a total expert. He's a Google developer expert, a Microsoft regional director, and MVP. He writes for Pluralsight. He's a former technology evangelist from Microsoft, and he's the author of the popular Angular Style Guy. John, how are you?
I'm doing well, Jesse. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well, and I'm really glad to have you here because we seem to be on the cusp of Angular 2.
Yeah, there's a lot of fun things coming, and it's now middle April, and I think ngConf is next month, early May, and that's the big annual Angular conference out in Utah. Utah, you know, that big mecca of software development, which it seems to become.
That's from a strange place for it.
It does, but they have a lot of great stuff out there. And yeah, so it's going to be a great conference next month, and we're expecting a lot of wonderful things out of Angular 2.
Well, let's talk about Angular 2 and Angular 1. Not that long ago, when I asked you and Ward Bell about creating a project in Angular 1 or Angular 2, you said definitely Angular 1. However, more recently, you've said definitely Angular 2. So has there been that big a change in where they are in development?
Yeah, so Angular 2, during its alpha stage, was extremely volatile, and they literally did like an alpha a week for about a year, which, you know, it's pretty cool in a way. You get to see it evolve, but it's unstable at that point. In the beta phase, which it's in now, and I think it's up to beta 14, they're still dropping about once a week, but I've had literally one breaking API since they've gone beta, and that breaking API wasn't even part of Angular. It was part of a thing that it uses. So it's been very stable, and it's approaching the point now where I don't know the release date, but it's getting close. And if I were to start a project today, I would definitely go ahead and use Angular 2.
Okay, let me be clear here. What if you're a developer who doesn't know Angular 1 yet? Would you still start with Angular 2?
I would. So if I was starting today and I didn't have Angular 1 skills and I wanted to get into doing SPA-related development with the web, I would look at Angular 2 directly. I would pass over Angular 1 and go right to Angular 2.
Okay. And if I wanted to learn Angular 2, and don't be afraid to plug your Pluralsight courses, what would be a good learning path?
I think, honestly, the best place to start is not even my course. It's the docs. There's a main page in the docs, and I can give you a link to it, Great. Where we go over like the architecture and the overview, and there's a cheat sheet. And I actually wrote a tutorial. It's a 7-chapter tutorial right on the Angular.io docs, their main website. Those are good places to start. And then there's a course in Pluralsight that I wrote called Angular 2 First Look, which assumes you have some experience with Angular. But even if you don't, quite frankly, only the first chapter really kind of talks about that. After that, it just assumes you don't know any Angular 2.
Well, that sounds like a path, and that sounds like a great way to get started. And you said that you wrote some of the documentation. Are you in the actual Google Docs for this?
I am. I was writing some earlier today, actually. So up in the Angular.io docs, there's a section in there called the Dev Guide. And in the Dev Guide, there is a tutorial. It's called the Tour of Heroes. And I wrote sections 1 through 6 in there. And the 7th one is one that I'm reviewing now.
You're such an underachiever.
Yeah, well, you know, I got to keep up with the Jesse Liberties of the world.
Oh, yeah, I see. Tell me about some of the differences between Angular 1 and Angular 2.
Cool. So let me tell you about 3 cool things I like to look at. First, in Angular 1, we had controllers, ng include, and we had directives. 3 different ways of putting content on the screen. In Angular 2, we have one real way of doing it, and that's a component. So we effectively limited those 3 things down to 1 thing, a component, more in the web component type model. So it's getting simpler. The second thing is we had services, providers, factories, values, and constants, 5 different things in Angular 1, all that really were a way to provide services to your application. In Angular 2, they're all gone. And instead, we just have a class. You just create a class and you give it functions and or methods that return values or hold state, and you can use it in your app. You don't need to actually declare it as a service factory provider, etc. So that got simpler. And then probably the biggest thing in the numbers game is, remember, Jesse, when you learn Angular 1, you got all these things that are ng dash in your HTML?
Yes, tell me about it.
Ng click, ng blur, ng mouse over, ng whatever. All of those things, I mean, I haven't counted them, but there's got to be 80 plus of these. Mm-hmm. I've been told, I don't know the exact number, but I've been told that most of these are gone. And now if you look, I've actually counted at least 40 of them are now gone in Angular 2. There's actually no need for them anymore. So we don't need to have all these ng, like ng click is gone. Don't need it. ng blur is gone. And instead, what we use is we use the DOM. HTML5 has a click event. It has a blur event. It's got all these events that are built into the DOM, and we can just take advantage of those. And we can bind to them, like the events we bind to them with by putting parentheses around the names in the HTML and then setting it equal to the function we want to call on our component. Mm-hmm. And if they're properties, we just put square brackets around them. So if you want to set like the background color of a div to yellow, you just say style.color inside of your HTML element and you wrap that with the square brackets and set it equal to whatever value you want to bind it to. And that got rid of a ton of Angular 1 code.
That is very cool.
There's a lot less to learn. It's kind of neat.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. Do you think the learning curve now is easier?
Well, for those things, definitely. I mean, there's some things that definitely got harder, too. One of the goals of Angular 2 is to be more performant and to scale more and, you know, really to move forward with the modern web. And an example of that is in Angular 1, every time that we created a service, we had to tell Angular about the service first, and then we could use the service. For example, if I created a logging service, I could define that service called logging. And I would first say like Angular module dot service and then add the logging service. That's telling Angular about it. And then later I could inject it with DI. It was a two-phase part. First tell it, then use it. Well, everything in Angular 1 was a flat injector. No matter where you injected it in your app, there was only one injector and it basically shared it throughout the entire app. Angular 2, they actually have a more hierarchical injector structure. Now, this makes it more powerful, meaning you could actually inject things at any component level, which means you could then modularize any component and ship them off on their own product. But it also means that now you have to understand the component hierarchy and the dependency injection hierarchy. So in one sense, it got more powerful with the new dependency injection and the services, but it also got more complicated, you know? So every time we get a new feature, it gets harder.
Usually the trade-off, yes.
Yeah. So it's jobs of guys like us to figure out how do we make this easier for.
When we used to talk about learning Angular 1, I used to refer to what I called the John Papa curve, which was that there was a fairly steep learning, and then it flattened out for a while, and then it got really hard again. Is that still true for Angular 2?
It's yet to be determined, I'm thinking. Because, you know, so far, the people I've watched and experienced and I've taught this to have all been learning, you know, through the alphas and the betas. And some of them have come from Angular 1, and their learning experiences are some things are easy because they can transfer their skills, and other things are hard because, like the injector, they had to change the way they were thinking about it. Mm-hmm. And then people who don't have the Angular 1 experience, the injector part was easier for them because they didn't have to unlearn anything and relearn. But then just components in general were hard because they had never done that before. So I'd say overall, I think there's still that it's easy to get going on it to do 80% of what you need. But the hard stuff is still hard. Like any framework or technology, once you get into really tweaking it, it just gets hard. .NET gets that way. PHP gets that way. And Angular 2, not going to say it's easy all the way through because it's not. There are some things that require some brain cycles.
Okay, let's back up and give a little context. Typical, good, well-designed web application. It's going to have a back end. It's going to no doubt talk to a database. And then it's going to have a front end. Is the entire front end going to be Angular?
Inside the browser?
As opposed to where?
Well, there's a lot of ways to think about a front end. Some folks think about a front end as being like a node layer that actually serves part of that too. If we're just talking about the browser though, I think you can mostly assume that it's going to be Angular and JavaScript and CSS and HTML.
Okay. And what about TypeScript? How does that fit in?
I think it's really important. And people who don't use TypeScript, it's... And you could actually include me in that a couple of years ago. Let me explain this, and I'm going to digress for a minute, because I think it's important to understand that I think TypeScript is a terrible name for the product, because it has types in it, but that's not why I use it. I don't use it because I like to have a type on everything. I use it because when I'm inside my editor, I like that my editor tells me I'm making mistakes as I'm typing. This is the big issue people have with JavaScript originally, right, Jesse? You're in a tool. You have no idea if you're making a mistake. It lets you type and do whatever you want to do. Right. And you only find out if it's wrong when you actually run the app or you run a unit test against it.
Or you ship it. That's usually the best way to find out.
So I like to tell people, hey, you know, why do you like to use TypeScript, John? What's the issue? Well, for me, it's because I don't like getting phone calls at 2 a.m. from directors or vice presidents telling me my app broke in production. Right. So TypeScript allows me to write better code as I go because the tooling is so was able to take advantage of all the features that are in TypeScript. It's not because TypeScript is so amazing to me. It's because of the tooling. And that's why I think that TypeScript's really important in whether you're using Angular, Aurelia, React, or whatever you're using.
Now, I had John Galloway on, and we were talking about the difference between ASP.NET 4 and ASP.NET Core. I don't I think that's what it's called now.
Yeah, Ford Core. And they rhyme.
They rhyme. It's always nice. And there's a fair amount of learning to go from one to the other. And there's a fair amount of learning to go to Angular, not to mention adding in Node and Gulp and what all. And what I'm trying to determine is what is the right path for someone who wants to develop a professional web application, and how long is that learning curve? What should they expect in terms of learning the necessary components to build something that looks and behaves properly?
You know, it's difficult because coming from the .NET world like we did, everything was Visual Studioized. You know, everything was an F5 button or a right click away for what we needed to do. And if you asked me 10 years ago, you know, how do you build something? I'd say, I pressed the button over there. You know, that's how it worked, right? And think about why that was the case is because building was always a predefined, there's only one way to do it. You take all the code, you compile it together, you make an EXE or DLL. And really, that was your only choice, right? EXE or DLL. Mm-hmm. And that was it. Now, build processes and the way we do things, there's so many options. It's almost like some people call it JavaScript fatigue. There's so many different ways to do everything that it's almost paralysis for trying to figure out, I don't know, well, there's 10 ways I can do it. Which one should I choose? So what I tell people is if you want to learn something, especially like Angular 2 or anything in the web world today, you should try to find one way that works. Don't focus on finding, well, I could do it this way or that way or this way. Find a way that definitely works, a happy path, and run with that first. And then you start realizing once you know how to make that path work. And one way to do that is to follow things like the style guide I wrote for Angular 1, and I'm working on a style guide for Angular 2 as well. And once you get that path for whatever you're using, you can then make your own determinations for, I don't like the way that this works here, I'm going to use this. And I'll replace one thing at a time. But it's too overwhelming, in my opinion, to sit down and go, okay, there's 3,000 options in front of me. How do I do a choose your own adventure out of this?
All right. What are the other pieces that we haven't talked about? For example, are you still adding Bootstrap into your application?
Yes. So let's think about the ecosystem. If you're going to build a web app with Angular 2, the first thing is when you write an app with Angular 2, you're going to notice there's less Angular 2. There's more just TypeScript or JavaScript to play with, which is great. And then you're going to want to pick some kind of CSS, either do your own or you're going to want to use some like grid system. And Bootstrap still works. Actually, Bootstrap 4 has come out, and that's pretty good too. But there's other options too, like Angular Material, which Angular Material Design 2 is, I think, right now in the alpha stage. It's a little behind where Angular 2 is, but it's coming along quite nicely, and that's going to look really nice. And then, of course, you can choose some of the others that are out there too, like Semantic, what's it called? Semantic Light, I guess. So there's other
options. Tell me about the material design.
So Angular Material Design, there's a version 1 of it. And let me back up. So Angular Material Design is actually based upon a design called Material Design. So Material Design is basically a way of designing things. And Google kind of came up with this. And Android follows a lot of it. And Angular has their own flavor of it called Angular Material Design. And they have that for version 1 of Angular. But they also have now an alpha for version 2 of Angular called Angular Material Design 2. And what that allows you to do is it gives you like widgets and grid styling and layouts and, you know, all sorts of cool controls that you can use.
And what makes it material design?
Well, the material design is just the name of the design methodology that it's based upon. So it's just material design is just its style, like how it does things. And the Angular is just how it became Angularized. If Angularized is a word.
Is this related to Android material design?
Yep. Yep, Angular Material Design is a flavor of Material Design, just like Android Material Design is a flavor of Material Design.
It's all Google goodness.
Yeah, and I think Microsoft's got one too called Fabric, I believe.
What are some of the other pieces like Gulp and Grunt? What are they from? What and how do they fit in?
So let's think about the problems that they solve and what problems they created as well. What problems that those kind of things solve for Angular 1 developers and for other web developers in general was, how do I build my application? I take my code that I've written, I run unit tests on it, I run linting tools on it, I, you know, minify all the code, I make sure it's all working the way I want, compact it, make bundles out of it, and ship it up and deploy it to a server somewhere. All that's got to happen. Well, Gulp and Grunt were two ways, very popular ways to do that, and they're still very popular. But they also allowed people to start using plugins from all over the place, and they had to figure out their own path. Like, how you build your tool is really up to you. which meant you really had to become much more aware of how you build things as opposed to pressing F5 like we used to. So that was, it solved one problem by creating a new problem of now I have to be really aware and tuned to this problem and how I solve it. In Angular 2, you can still use those things. And there's even tools like Webpack. There's another tool that'll do it for you. There's a tool called JSPM, which will do it for you. But what people are starting to lean towards is it's getting harder. So the Angular team is actually working on something called Angular CLI, stands for Command Line Interface. And the problem they're trying to solve here is, what if we don't restrict you from using Gulp and Grunt and Webpack if you want to, but instead we give you a way that works right out of the box, where you can say, you download Angular CLI, and then you just say ng, that's the name of their tool for Angular. So ng generate new project, and it'll generate a new project for you. And then you can say ng create component, ng create service, and it'll create all these things for you. And then you can say ng test, it'll run your tests. Say ng serve, it'll serve it and run it on your machine. You could say ng deploy, and it will deploy it to some place like maybe Azure or Heroku or Amazon. You could say ng dockerize, and maybe it'll build a Docker file for you. This is kind of the concept behind what they're doing, is finding a way to make it easy for people who don't necessarily want to write their own build system and test system. So Angular CLI is cool.
How far away is that?
They have something right now, and I think they're calling it pre-alpha, but I've been playing with it, and it's looking really good. And the reason I'm involved in it at all is because I'm working on the style guide, and obviously the style guide and the CLI should align somewhat. So we're trying to figure those things out right now.
So what else are you up to? Oh, I stopped him in his tracks.
What else am I up to? Busy as always, you know, lots of conferences, things going on, hanging out with the family like I always do, talking with great friends like you, Jesse. Always up to new technologies too, trying to figure out what the next great thing is going to be and what we need to pay attention to.
What is the next great thing and what should I be paying attention to?
I think next year, not this year, but I think next year is going to be the year of mobile apps. And I mean in a way we've probably never seen before. And the reason I say next year is that I think this year is when we're going to see all of these mobile technologies really come to a head. Xamarin being one where you can write C# and write multi-platform. You've got Ionic where you can write JavaScript and Angular and hit multi-platform. And then you got things like NativeScript where you can write JavaScript and Angular or React even and go multi-platform and React Native. These things are becoming more and more popular. They're all growing, but I don't think there's room for 7 or 8 solutions to be the winners in these. And I bet you next year, we're going to see more and more mobile. And one of those or two of those is really going to emerge in a major way.
Yes, I agree. I think, and I have my own self-interest, so I have to be careful, but I think that Xamarin stands in a different place than many of the others because it's C# oriented and because it's now part of Microsoft and open source at the same time, whereas most of the others are targeted at web programmers of one kind or another.
Yeah, I think it's very clear to me that if you're a C# developer and you want to stay a C# developer, the best way for you to write mobile apps or cross-platform is Xamarin, especially with the new changes they've made. Honestly, before that, the cost was prohibitive and Microsoft wasn't really as behind it. But now that they own it and it's free, I mean, why wouldn't you do that if you were a C# developer?
It's my favorite price point, free.
Free is awesome. But if you're a web developer, you can actually build native apps. I mean, really, if you think about NativeScript, which is by Telerik, our friends over there, it's really like Xamarin for web developer. They're effectively saying, you've got JavaScript skills. Great. Write JavaScript. We will compile it down to native for you.
Right. I would never go to someone who has a house of web programmers, web developers, JavaScript developers, and suggest that somehow Xamarin is a better choice for them. I think you might have been able to make that argument on Perf at one time. I don't think that that's meaningful anymore. But if you do have a group of C# programmers, then I think the answer there is obvious.
We have to realize, too, that we've both been around the block, right, Jesse, and seen a lot of things in this industry. And it's not always about what's the best tool. It's not always about what's the fastest tool. It's not always about really the raw facts. Sometimes it's literally about what will my company let me do? And what's easy for developers to get into and move with? And how can I be most productive? And what offers the least amount of risk for me, my development team, and my company?
Absolutely. We tend to hang out with people who, for many reasons, are living on the bleeding edge. Certainly, a lot of the folks I know are folks who are at conferences and presenting at conferences, and so they're on the bleeding edge. But the vast majority of developers are not there and don't want to be there. They want to be working on something that's V2, and fairly well established, and as you say, fairly low risk.
You know, I just heard you talking and I was thinking about Jack Nicholson. You want me on that wall. You need me on that wall. But you're right. It's not just about, I mean, sometimes, I mean, really think about it. Sometimes you're building an app and it's like, well, you know, if you got rid of that over there, it'd be faster. And you're thinking to yourself, my app runs in 0.1 seconds right now. What's the difference? Right. I mean, you know, yeah, you're right. You're right. Yes. But at that point, okay, if I'm going from 100 milliseconds down to, you know, 90 milliseconds, unless I'm building something that's got to, you know, support 10,000 transactions per second, I don't really care. You know,
that's
there's
right.
a negligible difference in my value at that point.
All right. So we've talked about Angular 2. We've talked about some of the tools that go into building an application. Let's talk a little bit about the process. When you sit down, first of all, do you tend to see this as something that a developer can do alone or really needs to be done in a small group?
Learning Angular 2?
And also building applications with it.
I think it could be either. I know plenty of people in both groups. There's, if you're just talking about learning and how it works, I mean, it all depends how you learn. I know plenty of people who don't like videos at all. They just want to read. I know people who want a hands-on and don't want to read or watch a video. And of course, I know people watch videos. So I think there's different folks with different ideas in how they learn. Me personally, I learn a ton by kind of researching it myself first for a little bit. And then I go build something and I like to go almost iterate over it. So I'll learn something. I'll go get with some friends who are like-minded. We'll hash out some ideas, share the code, maybe pair program, and then go back on my own, write some more code, and then kind of repeat the process. To me, that works out great because when I talk with other people, I get ideas I never would have thought of because I'm not them. And it's great. And we get to learn off of each other. And the best thing is teaching people who are not only below you, but also above you and side by side with you in your experience levels. So hit all three areas because it'll amaze you how much you learn from people who have no experience doing web programming too. I show Angular 2 to people who've never done it before. And there are several things that I've learned because I'm saying, wow, I never thought of it that way because they have experience in Java or .NET and they looked at it from a completely different angle.